This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On the UAE's number one talk radio station, Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer, and this is the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. You might notice a bit of a different sound today. We were broadcasting live from the Green Planet at City Walk and meeting the team behind the, well, an indoor biodome, a jungle in the heart of the city of Dubai. I even had a snake wrapped around my wrist at one point. We were discussing children's health, education and parenting. As a record, 300,000 students are now enrolled in private schools in Dubai. Does more competition mean more quality? Fiona McKenzie was on hand from Carfax Education to help us look through that data. We were asking, is work-life balance possible? With a mum of two who started her company when her second child was just 3 months old. Getting you in the mood for Eid. Lots of activities and events happening in Dubai for families. Kareem from Kids App was on hand. Meeting the mum who decided to solve the problem of STEM for Arabic speakers with her very own app, helping her children, but also others as well. And it was Sarah Stevens, the head of operations and curator at Green Planet, who was telling us what happens behind the scenes at this fantastic nature spot.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're talking children's health, education, parenting, and real spotlight on education at the moment, because the number of students enrolled in private schools in Dubai has surpassed 300,000 for the first time ever. This is up 5% on last year. We're looking at why with the head of education at Carfax Education. This is a consultancy business, Fiona McKenzie. Fiona herself has worked in independent education across the world, South Africa, Australia, the UK, and here in the UAE, where she's been for the last 12 years. So it's talking about how schools run. She's also the wife of a headmaster, governor of several UK schools, and the parent of four children. So seeing it on both sides, Fiona, thank you for being with us. Welcome to the jungle.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here.
I never thought I'd be having, you know, interviews next to a bat cave.
No, or toucans kind of flying past.
We haven't snuggled a sloth yet, but the afternoon is yet young. Thank you for being here. And I think this is such an important topic because I have to say, we're welcoming a lot more people to Dubai as residents. We've had a lot of people coming on holiday and thinking, actually, this could be a very good place to relocate. So when we look at that number, surpassing 300,000 students in private Dubai schools, is this simply a case of more people in Dubai, meaning more enrolments?
Yes, I think that is very much the case. But it's interesting about the demographic that's arriving in Dubai now, and obviously with school-aged children. So I think we've sort of seen a period where perhaps we've had sort of young singles coming, but I think now we're very much heading back into that kind of family zone, and schools are buzzing at the moment.
Quite rightly so. I mean, I don't need any convincing. I've got school-aged children myself and recognise what a fantastic place it is to live. With that age group children, it's been an absolute blessing. And I look at friends back home and think, oh, that's tough. But what my kind of key question is here, and we have seen something of an explosion of schools opening, even in spite of the last couple of years in the course of the pandemic. Does that mean more options, meaning more quality, more competition? With your kind of educate hat on, what would you say?
I think we're really blessed here. We have got some amazing schools, and certainly families that we're kind of showing around schools at the moment are just blown away by the quality of the schools and the facilities. And a lot of them say, oh, I can't believe I'm going to find anything as good as I got at home. And then they come here and they're like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that this was, you know, this is even an option. Mm-hmm. So I think the quality is very, very high. I think one of the things that keeps it high is the kind of regular inspection regime. So, you know, it's very transparent. The schools are inspected on a regular basis. There are very clear goals that schools are aiming for. I think that is, and that's a key part, I think, of why families are happy to settle here. They know that they can get a really good education for their children whilst they're here.
I do feel like for a long time it was a case of, we'll have kids here up to primary and then we'll go back to the UK for secondary because we're not so sure about the quality. And I feel like that conversation's really shifted in the last 5 years as well.
Totally, I completely agree. I mean, when you look at the kind of demographic 10 years ago, it would have been very much a kind of bottom-heavy pyramid with all the kind of, you know, FS1, FS2, and then tapering off as you go up through the school. And that's really evened out over the last 10 years. I think that's a testament, again, to the fact that the quality of education has really improved, and now the secondary education is brilliant. And also, you know, we deal with a lot of families who want their children to go back to UK schools, primarily kind of boarding schools. But they're delaying that decision more and more. You know, they might have gone back at 9, then they might have gone back at 11 or maybe 13, and now they're saying, well, maybe 16. Yeah, maybe that's a good time.
If you've got any questions for Fiona McKenzie this afternoon, head of education at Carfax Education, where they are really a consultancy basis. So I wanted to ask you about your demographic then as clients. How's that changed in terms of the age groups that people are looking at enrolling their children to school in Dubai and the kind of questions they have about it?
So at the moment we're dealing with students who are, well, families who are looking for places across the board. So, you know, literally from FS1 all the way up to sixth form at the moment. Yeah. And we've just seen a massive surge in the last 6 months of interest in schools out here. But it's very interesting that it is across the board. You know, it's not just young families moving here, it's families with all age children.
And Fiona, when it comes to common questions or priorities, I guess, from these families, what are people looking for? What are they pushing for?
Well, it's very interesting because obviously everybody always says, Fiona, I just want the best school. And I'm like, yes, but it's about
what
the best school for your child. And actually, that's a very different conversation. So we spend a lot of time with our families kind of explaining what the differences are in the education landscape out here. So I think that's the other thing that people don't appreciate. You know, we've got 215 private schools here. We've got 17 different curriculums out here. You know, it's phenomenal. There's nowhere else in the world that offers that kind of range. So families are asking me, you know, what are the education standards like? A lot of questions around the different curriculums. You know, would they be better with the British curriculum or IB or American curriculum? So we have a lot of kind of conversations around that, what's going to suit their child and their child's learning style. Some of it's about facilities, you know, if they're very sporty or very musical, how the school is going to kind of meet those needs. But I think, you know, one of the amazing things here is that the facilities in schools here are absolutely outstanding. So, you know, if you are creative, there's a school that's going to suit that. If you're musical, there's a school that's going to suit that. So there's definitely something for everybody.
What then are some of the questions that you should ask yourself as a parent and your child as well when embarking upon finding that match?
So I think a lot of that is around the kind of ethos and values of the school. Do they align with your kind of ethos and values? You know, what is it that you want for your child out of a school education? Yes, of course, it's going to be around the academics, but also it's about the extracurriculars. It's about the kind of peer group that they're going to be
Absolutely.
With as well. So there's lots of things to consider, and we would always advocate visiting a school because you get such a kind of feel for a place. It's really important to go and see it if you possibly can.
And that has become more possible recently. During the pandemic, it was, you know, a few virtual tours and videos on the website. So more of an interactive element now. And what are some of the key questions that you feel you should be asking people giving the tour or the principal if you get the opportunity to meet them?
Absolutely. And we actually literally give a kind of list of questions to our families when they're going around, because it's quite easy to forget what you want to ask when you're actually kind of on that tour. So it's very much lots of different things, really, you know, to do with the university destination, where are the students going on to? It's to do with teacher retention. Where do you recruit your teachers from? Exam results obviously is a key question, but I think for me it's actually about, you know, looking what's on the walls. It's looking into the eyes of the children. It's looking at the teachers and seeing if you can have a chat with the teachers and say, you know, what do you think are the great things about the school? Why are you teaching?
Get into the classroom.
Yeah, get into the classroom. Get and see what's really happening.
And now there's no getting away from it. Some schools in Dubai have got waiting lists. They've, you know, very much in demand. What are those schools looking for in prospective pupils?
I think that most schools the world over, but particularly here, are looking for children who are going to be enthusiastic, who are going to get stuck in, who are happy to give things a go, and who are going to be net contributors to the community. They want people who are going to join in and really make the most of the things that are on offer out here.
Lastly, in your years of experience, and if you could wave a magic wand and bring one aspect of education or change something, what would you like to see in the UA education offering, Fiona?
Gosh, that's a really interesting one, isn't it? I think the education system here, because it's so diverse and there are so many kind of different offers, that they've sort of got all of the bases covered in a way. And I think what's very exciting about education here is that it's very future forward. Mm-hmm. And I think the opportunities to be educated in an international environment with, you know, 60, 70, 80 different nationalities kind of in your school is just the most amazing opportunity and sets children up really well for life.
Sport for choice, but if you do need some guidance, by all means, do reach out. Fiona McKenzie speaking to us from Carfax Education. If you want those details, feel free to WhatsApp me on 4001 or use indeed 04871 5500. Carfax, I've had a couple of matches going. CARFAX.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's an honesty, a topic we've been asked about so many times on the show, so we're bringing in the experts. Adoption in the UAE, what you need to know. Joining us from Fotis International is partner George Saji Kuvilla. George, thank you for being with us. We've already had lots of messages on this on the text line, so answering my questions and our listeners this afternoon on 4001 and the WhatsApp too. How are you, sir?
Thanks a lot for having me on call, Helen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, if it's all right with you, I'd love to start with the basics. What are some of the big misconceptions or myths that you've heard about adopting legally in the UAE as your years in the legal field?
I would say that the biggest misconception that residents, expatriates, as well as people who come here on tourist visas, they have about adoption, is that adoption or fostering a child is completely not possible. That is not true. Now, the Sharia law does forbid adoption. However, there are ways under which a foster kind of a technique can be adopted in order to ensure that a child's interests are safeguarded.
George, can you explain what Islamic law says about adoption? And I don't necessarily need to have the full, you know, word of the law, but if you could paraphrase for it, Islamic law in particular.
Islamic law in particular forbids adoption. Adoption is not permitted under the Sharia law.
But there are means and ways in terms of, as you say, making sure the child's welfare is taken care of. You know, things are provided, of course. But when we're thinking about adoption for UAE residents, it's really looking outside of the UAE and perhaps often to people's home countries as well. But would you be able to explain if it is indeed possible to adopt from within the UAE, just for clarity?
Adoption within the UAE is not possible. That is in the broader term of adoption. However, taking some legal technicalities into consideration, we have the Wedimark Law, which is the federal law number 3 of 2016, which permits families, foster families, to foster children in order to ensure their, I would say, in order to ensure their integrity, in order to ensure that they have the welfare or they have the social security that the country is able to offer to them. That is a Wedimark law. Also, the law, federal law number 1 of 2012 on custody of children of unknown parentage, it lays down very critical provisions in order to ensure that children with who are basically orphans or who are in very undesired circumstances are cared for through a particular set system.
So this might be abandoned children, and obviously the law needs to be very, very clear that these children are in dangerous or unfavourable situations. There's a very, you know, explicit process that needs to be investigated. So let's put the UAE aside, because as you've alluded to, you know, often it is through other countries or indeed people's home countries where the most opportunities lie if you are looking to expand your family through adoption. George, as it stands, how do you know as a parent, which countries it is possible to adopt children from as UAE residents?
See, as a UAE resident in the UAE, we see citizens of various different nationalities on a day-to-day basis with the multi-diverse cultural, I would say, scene that we have here. Now, adoption is possible and should be possible, and it is permitted in UAE in so far their home countries of these residents are concerned. So, for example, let's say you're from a particular country in which your home country permits you to adopt a child. So the UAE government does not deny the entry of that child into the UAE. That child could come into the UAE and would be treated as your biological child. There would not be any particular differentiation. However, let's say you are in the UAE and you want to foster a child in the UAE. There is a set provision and there are set criteria that you need to meet in order to be able to foster a child in the UAE. Some of that criteria would be that you would have to be of Muslim religion, you would need to be an Emirati, you should not be younger than the age of 25, you should have the financial capability to take care of the child, so on and so forth.
And so George, then let's use the UK as an example, just for ease of kind of process. Can you talk us through the steps? Because I understand you need to get permission from the embassy of your home country as a starting point. Is that correct?
Correct.
So once you've obtained that permission, how long can a process take and what would you do from then?
It is a lengthy process. However, it is a very streamlined process as well these days. So, for example, let's say someone wants to adopt a child from the UK, they ideally need to contact a family lawyer in the UK. And if that person is a resident in Dubai, they would also ideally need to contact a family lawyer in the UAE. And initial process would start by contacting the embassy in or the UK embassy in the UAE. And the family lawyer in UK will start the procedure and the initial paperwork in order to ensure that the adoption process is cleared in the UK. After the entire paperwork and the process is cleared there, that's when the UAE lawyer takes hands into all of those papers and processes the child's UAE residence visa, so on and so forth. It definitely takes a couple of months, and it is very necessary that these residents in UAE, they are absolutely aware of this entire procedure, which is a case-to-case basis. It is definitely considered on a case-to-case basis because the eligibility of the foster parents is taken into consideration in every jurisdiction across the globe before a child is given to them.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking adoption this afternoon. It is a topic we've had an awful lot of questions about over the last few weeks and months. So we're bringing in the expert today. George Saji Kuravilla is with us, partner at Fotis International, answering your questions and mine about what the law says, the practicalities as well. George, just to recap for anyone that's just tuned in, the process really starts with getting permission from the embassy of your home country. So then what do we know about the process in terms of assessing suitability of the prospective parents?
So, Helen, the process would actually differ from the laws of the particular country that you're talking about. So, for example, in the UK, you would be able to adopt a child even if you're single or married or if you're in a civil partnership as well. As long as you meet the particular criteria that are set by each country, you would be able to adopt the child in that home country and you would be able to bring those children into the UAE without any legal hurdles whatsoever.
What then if you're looking to adopt a child from another country, if you're looking to other parts of the world, is that possible at the moment as a UAE resident?
Definitely. Adoption is it's not a complicated subject, frankly speaking. I would say that it's the misconception and the misinformation about adoption that makes it a very grey area in today's world.
So we're here to clear that up a little bit, and I'm keen to get your take when it comes to the legal side of this. What rights do adoptive children have here in the UAE?
So, for example, if the child is adopted outside the UAE and he's brought into the UAE, the child will be treated as a original child of those parents. So they are not technically treated as adopted children per se. However, like the process that I had mentioned earlier on the show, if the adoption if the fostering process takes place in the UAE, then those children would merely be cared for. They would not be treated as the birth children of the parents. So concepts of inheritance or gifts, that would definitely be varied if the fostering process takes place in the UAE.
George, can I ask you then, does that extend to things like maternity and paternity leave?
Now, maternity and paternity leave is a relatively newer concept here, and the UAE labor law does not clearly distinguish between these leaves in cases of birth children or adopted children. So I think that is something that we will need to wait and see over the next couple of months.
We've had a number of questions for you, George, and I'm going to try and summarize a few of them as easily as possible. Sure. Interesting question regarding costs from Emily saying, can you please share how lawyers charge for this process? Is it for the adoption as a whole, from start to finish, or by the hour? Because I would imagine there'd be quite a few different aspects and elements along the way that, you know, you might not have any control over that might slow things down. George, how does it work from that practical financial side?
I would only be able to speak on behalf of lawyers in the UAE. And insofar lawyers in UAE are concerned, I think there are mainly two different fee structures that lawyers would provide in such assignments. One would be an hourly fee rate, where the hourly fee rate could vary from anywhere between $200 to $1,500. Or the second is a case-by-case or an assignment-by-assignment fee structure, where the fee structure would actually depend on a lot of different factors, such as where the parents are going to adopt the child from, what are the technicalities or the legalities of the country in which they are going to adopt the child from, so on and so forth.
Thank you for that, and thank you, Emily. No name on this message saying, in your expert's opinion, where are the easiest countries to adopt from if you're living in the UAE? Based on, obviously, it's going to completely vary from family to family and experience to experience, but in your work there at Fotis International, have you found any countries that seem to be, you know, a bit more cooperative, I guess, for want of a better phrase, or the mechanics and paperwork processes are a bit more established that can make things a bit faster for getting that child into the family home?
I would say that the process of adoption in the UK, it's relatively streamlined. Definitely all the countries have their own regulations and their own procedures in place for the adoption process. I have worked on certain assignments, and from my experience, I would say they're all streamlined, but particularly in the UK, the process is streamlined, and I'm more than certain that all the embassies in the UAE, they would very well be accommodating for any parents who want to adopt children in their home countries. Along with that, the help of the expert lawyers that we have in the UAE should play the trick.
George, thank you so much for your time. We've had a number of people asking for your contact details, so I will make sure that those are sent out to you. If you're happy for us to share your email, I hope that's okay, sir. But really useful to get a bit of legal clarity on the situation here. And we will, of course, be following up with a number of families who have reached out, wanting to share their stories too. George, thank you for your time.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The UAE's number one talk radio station.
Helen Farmer with you. We are live from Green Planet, and I am currently cradling a snake called Noodle. It's not the way I thought my Thursday afternoon would be going, but unexpected things happen when you're in the Dubai's own biodome. And joining us now is Sarah Stevens, the head of operations, the creator of the group of Green Planet, and the woman responsible for introducing me to Noodle. What kind of snake have I got wrapped around my wrist?
Well, you're welcome for that. So you've got little Noodle, who's one of our baby Burmese python snakes. So he's about 5 months old and just a little one.
How big is Noodle going to grow?
Noodle's going to grow to about 6 meters long. About 6 meters long. So just a little baby right now.
Not to ask an indelicate question, we know Noodle's a boy, or do we not really know?
Well, no, for more certain as Noodle gets a bit older, but I think Noodle's a boy.
He's got the vibe.
He's got the vibe, and he's really enjoying hanging out with you. You're like a tree for him right now. He's just chilling.
Feeling's not 100% mutual, Noodle. I've got to be honest. If I shriek during the course of the next kind of 15
you're
minutes.
Natural. Looks great.
Well, I'm more kind of down with hanging out with Noodle than I would be going into the bat cave, Sarah. Is it true you've introduced bat feeding?
We have. So not only do we have the only immersive bat cave in the region, but you now have the opportunity to feed the bats. So you can go in with some of their favorite smoothie. It's a nice, healthy mixture of tomatoes and oranges and protein and different things. And you can offer it and actually have the experience to feed them.
Now, for anyone that hasn't been to Green Planet, I find it quite a difficult thing to explain to people, to be honest, because it's unlike anything I've ever been to. It's a completely enclosed ecosystem. It's Dubai's indoor rainforest.
Yes.
How many creatures, for want of a better phrase, have you got under the glass roof here?
Sure. So there's thousands. There's over 3,000 species of plants and animals, hundreds of different animals. And the really special part is it's their home first. So they're roaming. It's their house. And we're all here just visiting.
And I think that's what's really special, I think, especially from a kid's point of view and about an animal education point of view. It is often, I mean, yes, it's hugely interactive. I currently have a snake wrapped around my wrist. But a lot of it is about that education piece. It's about sitting back, watching them do their thing, feeding, interacting. And it really is really, really special. Now, we had some big news at the end of last year, which was the arrival of a baby sloth.
A baby sloth.
How is little Lime getting on?
Little Lime is doing really well. So little Lime is now over 2 kilos. She's growing super fast. Still catching a ride with her mom around a lot of the time, which I think is just her taking advantage at this point. But she's growing fast and becoming quite the little sloth lady. How you doing there with Noodle?
Noodle's looking at my script and just making sure everything's on going time-wise.
Well, I appreciate that, Noodle.
Hi, Noodle. Goodness, this is just not a day I thought I'd have at work. Rick is enjoying himself. You're watching my discomfort here, Rick. Yeah, great. Thanks, mate. But I think for my kids, in honesty, we get a different experience out of Green Planet every single time we come, because they love to run around and see what's going on. They love to have a chat with, you know, all the staff here. Last time we came, there was an indoor tropical rain shower.
There is. We have our thunderstorm show that happens at least twice a day. And again, it's the only rain that you get in Dubai, really. Well, except for last night, but usually the only rain. So it's a good opportunity for kids to learn about the importance of water.
Should I have packed an umbrella just to protect my laptop, Zara?
Oh, no, you're okay where you are. That's the greatest part, is you can watch it without getting wet or with getting wet. But in the middle of summer, it's a great opportunity to escape the heat and get some nature, which is so hard to do.
That's the thing. You get that green fix. Now, speaking of getting wet, piranhas.
So did you know that we do have the only in the world snorkel with piranhas program?
No.
Where you can actually get in the water, snorkel, and be about a meter and a half away from our piranhas when they are receiving their food, which is basically 3 to 4 big chickens or lamb leg or turkeys.
Whoa.
Dropped in the water for them to
eat.
Say
a lamb leg.
Absolutely. So the thing about piranhas is they're actually scavengers. They eat dead and decomposing sources.
Sorry, noodles.
We've got
going
a bit of a split
desk.
Attention here.
Noodle. Come here.
But they're not those vicious killers that the movies make them seem. They play a really important part of the food role and the food chain, and this is a great opportunity for guests to experience that hands first in the water.
So snorkeling with piranhas. Fish feeding as well, bat feeding.
Absolutely. We just want you to be nice and immersive and get an opportunity to hands-on see why these animals are important and why we should all do a little more at home to help care for them.
Well, it's interesting. So at my daughter's school right now, they're doing future curriculum week and they get to choose a subject to kind of study for the week. And my daughter's chosen saving the orangutans.
Oh, I love that.
And she's come home with, I mean, kids can be pretty strict about these things. She's like, Mummy, we need to talk about Daddy's toothpaste because it's got palm oil in it. And she's like laying down the law with our shopping list.
Well, they're the ones for the future, right? It's their world that we're trying to preserve here.
And I think the camps here do a really great role of that as well. Hugely popular. You've got, see, kind of the younger ones, so age 5 and up. But then I guess the kind of tweens and teens programs too. I mean, when I went into my daughter's classroom yesterday and asking them what they want to be when they grow up, we had a lot of ninjas.
Okay,
so,
fair.
We all had a few princesses, but we did have a lot of zookeepers and vets.
I love that.
And I think this is really as close as you can get in Dubai to having that kind of, you know, what does it actually involve experience.
Yes.
In terms of what you're passionate about as an animal lover here, do you have any favorite species or even favorite creatures individually, Zara?
Oh, man, that gets a little bit of a tricky one. Mm-hmm. I think the political answer would be whoever that day does something surprising that I never expected, because we're constantly underestimating them, right? So there'll be whatever animal that day will do something that you go, you know what? I didn't think you're going to do that, but I love that you're breaking boundaries and you're doing whatever you want. The other day, the lemurs decided to play a game where they were ninjas themselves, sneaking up on the sloths, literally covertly pushing them so that they rocked back and forth and then running away. And that was the game of the day. And you're like, genius. This is brilliant. But we have a zookeeper for the day program running all through the Eid holiday, morning or afternoon session for 3 hours, where kids, adults, anyone can actually be behind the scenes, see what we do. And learn a little bit more about what a future career working with animals could look like.
3 hours, I mean, that's a considerable amount of time. What kind of insights would you typically get to, you know, learn about, but also get your hands dirty as well, I hope?
Definitely getting your hands dirty, preparing diets, preparing toys or enrichment for the animals, going behind the scenes to our back of house room, seeing how we feed them, how we prepare the live foods. I don't know if you know, but we have a whole room where we just take care of roaches and worms and beetles, because we have to raise those to feed to other animals. So you kind of see all that kind of back of house stuff that you wouldn't on a normal journey. So it's a great experience.
Now, I have got a small Burmese python currently wrapped around my wrist. Hi, Noodle. Noodle's trying to drink my water. What does Noodle normally eat?
Noodle normally eats a small mouse once every 2 weeks.
When was the last time Noodle ate?
Within the last week, he's doing well. So he eats about once every 2 weeks, but he could go up to about 6 weeks without eating.
And what then about kind of emulating those hunting behaviors and those kind of predator-prey dynamics in an environment such as this?
That's it. So every one of our animals has a different diet specifically for them. They eat different amounts of days of the week in different styles, depending on what is most natural and best for them. So Noodle's once every 2 weeks of his small mouse is perfect for his diet.
Hang on, let me just support Noodle. Hang on, give him, put my microphone down.
He is going rogue. He is all over.
Hey, come here.
He's really just the star of the show today.
So his parents are called what?
His parents are called Alan and Gertrude.
They're the least scary names I've ever heard for 6 foot long snakes.
I mean, you know, everyone's got to have a name.
Well,
so they've got.
Well, that leads me to ask, how on earth do you choose the names for these creatures? Because some are born here,
yes.
Such as, you know, baby Lime.
A lot are born here. Absolutely. So we have a very diplomatic system. It usually results in whoever claims a name first on our team is the name that sticks. But our Burmese pythons, all of our snakes are labeled by letter. So Burmese A, Burmese B, Burmese C, Burmese D. So then we come up with a name that starts with that letter.
Ah, so what other names have you got?
So Alan is Burmese A and Gertrude is Burmese G. So they
I love
all
Alan's like
there.
Alpha.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how their names stem for our official records versus their name. But everyone's got their own characteristics, and, you know, Jack and Lily the hyacinth, and Liam and Lime and Lemon the sloth, so it's all about them.
And then what about acquiring animals? You know, I know you've done some rescue programs here as well. Can you tell us a little bit about how some of them come to be here at the Green Planet?
Sure. So all of our animals are either rescued in conjunction with the government or born under human care and moved around as to what's best for conservation breeding programs and habitats for them.
Noodle. I've never done a radio show with a snake.
I mean, but really, he's just the star of the show. I think he's become a celebrity today. Everyone should come to the Green Planet to see Mr. Noodle.
Get your selfie with Mr. Noodle. But that, I think that's raising a really interesting point, because we do get an awful lot of questions on our Pets and Vet shows on Wednesday about exotics and can I have a sugar glider as a pet, or I really want a bush baby. I mean, is there any messaging that you would, you know, think is really important for people to hear today about having creatures such as this as
pets? It would be to both highly research before you get an animal that's not a domesticated animal, where they come from, what the proper paperwork should look like for getting from them from a responsible source, and just consider the amount of effort and specialized care that goes into them. We've got a full-time team of specialists that are caring for every individual need, but involves lots of exotic supplements and food sources and constant care that is very hard within your home to do.
I was just about to say, and also the expense as well.
Yes.
I think, and that's an awful lot to do with why a lot of these animals are, you know, given up, because people not understanding how long they live, for one.
Absolutely.
The amount of care and the expense, you know, as you're saying, specialist food, specialist vets, and this is the, you know, this is what you need to, let's stick with cats and dogs, people. Where's Noodle going to go now after his close-up with me?
So Noodle is going to go back to doing his own thing for a little bit, probably get some water and hang out, because, you know, this is his home and he just does what he wants.
He is the boss. Sarah, thank you so, so much. What are you looking forward to over Eid, people coming down and exploring?
Absolutely. Just coming, spending time with families in nature and exploring maybe some animals and plants and environment that you don't see every day.
Last question. We're situated next to the Bat Cave.
Yes, we are.
It's no secret. I have something of a phobia.
Okay.
Do I need to be afraid of bats? Can you convince me that these should be my new furry friends?
Absolutely. Not so similar to the piranhas. Bats are an animal that get a bad rap for being scary animals, but I don't know if you realize that every single person's backyard in the entire world, unless you're in Antarctica, has bats. There's 4 species of bats right here in Dubai in everyone's yards, and they're so important because without them you don't have pest control, you don't have seed dispersal with more plants, and really they're just flying mammals. They're just a little hamster but with wings.
I was thinking rats with wings, but I prefer the hamster. Maybe we need to do a bit around the PR
there
messaging.
You go.
I'm moving to Antarctica. Thank you so much, Sarah. Really, really appreciate it. I'm going to keep Noodle with me for just a little bit longer.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Thursdays, we talk children's health, we talk education, we talk parenting too, and bringing that all together is our next guest. Siva is the co-founder of Syndion Education Media. It's a Dubai-based startup that created the STEM Buddies education app for children in English and Arabic. And we live in a country, of course, where there are so many different cultures, nationalities, and even though English is spoken widely, a lot of parents still want to learn their mother tongue as well, and that was the case for Siva Al-Shuli. She was keen to get her kids to watch more Arabic content, but they kept saying there wasn't anything fun to watch in Arabic, so she decided to create her own app. STEM Buddies, STEM of course standing for Science, Technology, Engineering and Mathematics. Siva, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well. It's a very unusual show for me because there's a sloth about 6 feet away. How old are your children? Can you tell us a little bit about your family?
Yeah, I have a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, and a 14-year-old, old boy.
So the full spectrum when it comes to entertaining and educating as well, I guess. And as I said, you felt like something was missing in the Arabic market when it came to STEM education in particular. What did you identify as a bit of a gap that you felt like you could be ultimately helping with?
Yeah, at the beginning, like being an expat in Dubai, and like you said, everything is in English, everything is available in English, the schools are international, so you don't find a lot of Arabic content. So we were trying to encourage our boys who are so much into science and technology to do what they want, but in Arabic, do what they enjoy in Arabic. And then they would always just shy away and go back to English, for example, like watching WorldCraft or looking for whatever on YouTube in English. So at the end, when we like had an issue about it, they were like, there's nothing interesting in Arabic. And when we looked and tried to help them, we found out that they were right. Nothing much is there in Arabic, just not to say that there's nothing at all, but nothing much. So we decided as parents that we want to do something about it.
Siba, and I don't want to draw too straight a line between this lack of content and perhaps performance, but when you started doing research, you did find some quite alarming statistics out. Can you tell us about your findings?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we started the idea, it was just about our children. They like STEM, so let's look up things that relate to that. But then when we started looking at the education in the Middle East and in the Arab world, we found out that there's actually a crisis, that despite investing heavily in education, the Arab world suffers from a huge gap in literacy and skills, that the skills that they teach in schools do not match what the labor market needs. And statistics from the World Bank, UNICEF, UNESCO says that despite that, more Arab children are attending schools than ever. Mm-hmm. Half of them are failing to learn. So this is really alarming and would let people think and want to invest more in education, especially STEM.
It is really alarming. It is. And I'm glad it's you that's kind of taken it upon yourself to do your part. But you're perhaps not the most natural fit for this because you're an architect by profession. Why did you decide this was going to be your calling in this situation?
Yeah. I have a background in architecture and urban planning, and I was working at a government entity at the time. But then I guess you could relate that at a certain stage of your life, like your priorities change as a mom. So you want to make more impact. So I didn't mean to make that change. It just happened while looking for my kids for better stuff. So mm-hmm. I started educating myself. I started learning more. And eventually I even got a master's in education entrepreneurship from Finland last year. Mm-hmm. So I can step up to my new role as a co-founder of an edtech startup.
Well, let's talk about what the actual app entails. It started as a book. Can you talk us through the journey and how it's evolved to present day?
So at the beginning, all I wanted to do is write a book. Books seem simple enough and easy enough to share. And then when we started looking for more content and what's missing and probably thinking more as an entrepreneur, I thought that maybe book will not cut it. So we went into what's popular, digital. So we thought maybe we'll do a digital book. And then the digital book became an animated video. And then the video was not enough because we don't want children only to watch videos. So we turned it into an educational app. And that was, of course, with the help of like 25 professionals from around the world, educators from the US, from Finland, from Palestine, from Jordan, from all over the world to try to get to the what we consider the best tool to help children in the Arab world and eventually worldwide. Because by doing the Arabic, we ended up having a byproduct of an English content. So we did both English and Arabic and packaged it in an app.
So, Siba, STEM Buddies is now, well, it's an award-winning app. You've had over 230 downloads. You've got tens of thousands of active users. What can people find when they download it, and what can kids kind of look forward to from that content? Because when we think about kind of, I don't know how to put this, education apps, my kids don't necessarily resonate with the ones that I want them to use. They might have other ideas. Yes. So how are we ticking the box for both kids and parents with STEM Buddies?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a struggle for many parents, including ourselves. Like I mentioned at the beginning, when we were directing our children towards content in Arabic, that wasn't necessarily educational app per se, or that has some sort of criteria. So through this journey, we learned that educational apps need to be really educational in a sense that they're preferably certified by an educational entity. This is something that we learned to know that it's important. Any learning content must have a learning goal. So you cannot just have any content and put it in an app or a website and claim that it's educational. It needs to be like directed at a certain age, have learning objectives, that when the child is done with it, he actually learned something. As a parent, at the same time, you want things to be interesting for your children. So our STEM Buddies app in particular has gotten really amazing reviews and feedback from parents, from children, from educators. We have the STEM Buddies, which are four characters that are friends, and they learn through experience by wandering around and playing around. They stumble upon a phenomenal scientific phenomena, and they learn from it. So the children relate so much to them, in a good way, of course, and each one of them wants to be like one of the STEM characters. So when you go through the app, you first watch the video for 4 to 5 minutes, because our content, like, we've designed it in a linear way. So you start by watching the video, and then you have a quiz that tests your understanding of the content. It's also interactive and fun. And then the children even get rewarded for that and for scoring in the quiz. You have interactivities like mix and match, like puzzles, and then we have more, also coloring pages, puzzles, and more fun stuff. So once you finish a topic, you can move to the next topic, and it's done in levels. We are at the beginning as a startup, so currently we have 2 levels and 7 episodes, and we do not encourage parents to just give the app for their kids and stay on it forever, because a lot of people think if it's a successful app, then kids need to stay on it for like hours. We believe that 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day should be enough. And then the children need to move offline by trying to sort of implement what they've learned, or try to see it in nature, observe it. Like, for example, we have an episode on flying. So we encourage that parents to, after the flying episode, to go around and perhaps do a kite with their children or a plane. On our social media, we have links for experiments, so the parents can do those with their children and try to support them with their STEM learning outside the app.
Siva, we've had a few questions on this topic. One asking about costs and in-app purchases, which I know can be a bit of a sticking point for many families. Another one from Snee asking what age it's suitable for. What age group did you have in mind? As you said, your kids ranging all the way through, but what do you think is the ideal user age for STEM Buddies?
It would be between 4 and 9, because at the beginning, between age 4 and 9, they get curious about the content. They might not understand it all, but children are very intuitive. They can click and tap and they will learn. And you'll see, I see that with my 5-year-old, how his understanding and mastery of the content develops day by day and sometimes month by month. So we have an episode on gravity. He might not fully understand what is gravity, but at one point it will click. When something falls, he goes like, ah, that's the gravity that the character Doc was talking about. So in principle, it's for ages 4 to 9, and it depends on your child. In terms of cost, we actually had the app for free for the longest time. And then around a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, we switched to a freemium model. And that means that you can have 1 level or episode for free. If you like the app, then you do the subscription. And the subscriptions are not high, because we want it to be affordable and accessible. The whole idea started with trying to have more access to education for the entire Arab world. So we don't want it to be expensive. But in principle, and as even like a tip for parents, it's better to go for apps that are paid. Do not go for an app that has ads, because that's unethical to a certain extent and not pedagogical. So preferably go to a paid app. If it's not paid, it's better if it's for a non-profit, because they can afford to create content and have it on for free.
Well,
so
as a parent of a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, I'm definitely be checking it out. I read an really alarming article today out of the UK press talking about how girls aren't doing A-levels in maths and physics because they find the maths, quote, too hard. This is from an educator. So I think we've got a lot of work to do as parents of both genders, but by making it fun and having a bit of a gamification, and the characters in the app are so cute, Siva, I'm definitely giving it a whirl. So well done on this. It's fantastic to see someone out there to solve a problem for her own children, but also for the wider community as well. For anyone who's been in touch, it's called STEM Buddies. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
I'm curious to get your take on this. Do you think work-life balance is possible? Now, for many of us, having children represents, you know, our life's biggest achievement, but it also marks the beginning of perhaps the biggest balancing act that you will ever face. And this work-life balance is arguing, you know, arguably one of the most kind of parent dilemmas that many, many people face. And it is, in my opinion, almost impossible to achieve. So what's more important to parents, work or career, time with the kids, money or time? How do we juggle life to achieve that work-life balance goals? We need money to do things with our kids, but we need to minimise our working hours to create time with them. Is it a catch-22 conundrum, or is there an answer? New surveys come out found that 93% of people say they'd like to work for an employer who supports and encourages a greater work-life balance. This was carried out by food company Kellogg and job site Indeed out of the UK, and it found that almost 40% of respondents said they'd be unlikely to take a job with a company that did not have a flexible or hybrid working policy in place. And this figure increased to 42% for women aged 35 to 44. To discuss this, we are bringing in Anishka Jahani, CEO of Yardstick Marketing. She's an entrepreneur, a mum who started her organisation when her second child was just 3 months old. She's got a master's in business administration from Middlesex University and founded Yardstick at the age of 28. She's joining us now at Green Planet. Welcome to the jungle. How are you?
Good afternoon, Helen. It's so lovely to be here today.
Well, I've got lots to talk about, both from you as a professional, but also you as a parent. But can I get a bit of background? How old are your children now?
So my son is 17 and my daughter is 10.
Let's get right to it. Do you think there is such a thing as a work-life balance?
Absolutely.
Do you?
Truly, truly believe in it. I practice it and I think it's worked wonders for me. It's been 17 years since I've been in the PR business, and I have always ensured that work gets priority when the time's right, and so do kids.
It's interesting that it's PR, because this is what my husband used to work in. I've got a lot of friends who work in PR, and it's the kind of the one of the common mantras, you know, it's busy, demanding hours. You've got clients who are demanding of your time because they're paying for it.
Yes.
But you know, it's PR, not ER. And I think that, you know, sometimes when we're caught up in a project or a deadline, we've got a boss, work can feel just all-encompassing, especially if it's your own business.
Yeah, absolutely. But when I started, it was, so Yardstick's 10 years old, but before that I was with an agency, and at that time as well it was very clear, because you need to have a boss who understands where you are at with your life journey. If you've had a child or if you're raising one, you do need to have a few liberties and exceptions. And that's something as agencies our size, boutique agencies, always, always encourage. So currently our workforce, 95% are women. And as you know, with women, we've got mothers in there. And mothers don't have all days which are good. There are good days and bad days with the kids. But then the way we operate and the way I've always operated, because I've had two kids of my own, and I completely, you know, kind of stand by them, because it's flexible, we give them flexible hours, it really doesn't matter what it is, as long as the tasks are done. And also, it's also about teamwork. Mm. It's being able to pick up from someone in case of an emergency. And that's the sort of environment we inculcate in a small working atmosphere.
And know that that would be the case if you had an emergency, and that it becomes this kind of circular supportive system. But that's a really interesting point you raise in terms of the responsibility that's on your shoulders as a business owner to encourage that from the top down. And I really wish, well, I wish more women in positions of power, full stop, but I really wish that those women who are there are more transparent about some of the emotional struggles they might be facing. And same for men, 100%. I really wish more working dads would say, do you know what, I really want to do this with my kids today, or I'm not able to come into the office because of this family reason. Do you feel like more humanity could be needed, even though maybe it's arguably at its highest after the pandemic?
I do believe, and I think with the new labor laws which have just been announced with paternity leaves, you know, I think in terms of the UAE's vision of where we are and, you know, how supportive parents have, you know, in terms of organizations, I think they've become much more supportive. So I think there's a lot to kind of thank the government for, the regulations, the labor laws, etc., even in bigger organizations. But in some smaller organizations, and this is what I know from a lot of my peers who run businesses, they've always been extremely empathetic and, you know, understanding of somebody's personal situation, because at the end of the day, everyone wants to do a good job. And, you know, if you're passionate about what you do, there's not even one day that you don't want to show up to work. So,
now, I wanted to ask you, Anishka, about the impact of the pandemic, because do you think it has changed perhaps the way we view priorities in our lives? You know, we've seen the great resignation around the world, and it does seem to indicate that money and success are only part of the story, that employees need balance and well-being too. Have you noticed a shift either within your own company, your own likes, or even around you?
So the pandemic just made us pause and think about the work environment. Yeah, we don't really need to be in the office in order to do those hours. So we just need to ensure that we are accessible. We do have a good internet connection, and we can essentially work from anywhere, everywhere. So that's what the pandemic taught a lot of us. And we did find newer ways and technology supporting work from home as well, much more than it used to in the past. So I think in all good ways, when we look back, the pandemic did, it teach us a lot and gave us a lot many more options.
I think for many people, especially now, I mean, a lot of us are very lucky in Dubai that we might not necessarily have a big commute. I think if you're going to the capital or vice versa, it's different. But, you know, and certainly in parts of Europe where a commute might be an hour and a half on the train, you know, we're seeing this resignation because people go, well, do you know what, we've been really productive these last 2 years, and that allowed me to take, you know, my child to school and have that flexibility and do play dates. And now a lot of companies perhaps not learning from the last couple of years and going, do you know what, we're going to go back to the way we were, and we're getting something of a reaction. Messages coming in saying, not possible, I'm having it.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation and have your say. We're talking work-life balance, and Stephen Covey, the author of the best-selling book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, said the challenge of the work-life balance is one of the most significant struggles by modern man. Let us know your thoughts on this. 4001, you can use the ARN Play app. In conversation this afternoon with Anishka Jahani, CEO of Yardstick Marketing. She set up her company when she was 28, when her second child was just 3 months old. They're older now, 10 and 17. But Anishka, how do you deal with any disappointments from them if you're not able to do something with them because of a professional commitment?
So being from a communications background, I've always believed communication is the only way. And trust me, children do understand. So it's always that when I go back home, they exactly know what's going on in my day. Not everything, but yes, I do have to filter. But I think communication has always helped me, you know, and I've never had any sort of challenge there, because they've always understood where mom's coming from, what is she doing, why is she doing what she does as well.
That's what I was going to ask you. So talk us through that, because it obviously depends on the age of the child and, you know, what they're able to grasp. With younger children, I get very kind of irrational to them, to my mind. To their mind, it's perfectly logical. You know, you want to be at work more than you want to be with us. And it's very hard to explain that, you know, I obviously have very set working hours and, you know, I love what I do and we work for XYZ reasons. Yeah. So with you, and you're talking there about communication, is it about explaining what you're doing and why? Or what does it look like, Anishka?
Honestly, whenever I've had days where I've worked like 23, 24 hours a day, there have been days like that, I have ensured I do compensate my time with them. So there is always that compensation that we always talk about. So be it Eid holidays, I ensure that I'm not at work and I don't look at my email on those particular days. So I've defined my boundaries very clearly. And maybe I can do that because I run a business, but even in general, the team as well, they know that this is time which is with the family and this is time at work.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, some of the rules or boundaries that you've put in place to protect your time, both professionally and with the family. Can you talk us through some of the things that have worked for you in the past?
I think if I'm happy, I'm going to raise happy children. So I always believe in spending a lot of time with myself. Now, when I say a lot of time, it's a minimum of 2 hours a day. So I do need my 1 hour of workout and 1 hour of me time. And this is non-negotiable. And that may happen in the morning. It may happen sometimes in the evening. But mostly, I do need that time. And it's for my sanity. I think it's extremely important for parents to understand, especially mums, that they do need to allocate some time for them. Otherwise, it all translates into a lot of anxiety, frustration, which they in turn end up passing on to their children. So happy mom raises a happy child.
And in terms of practical things, you mentioned there, you know, being clear with the team that this is family time, and this is, unless of course it's an emergency, this is not to be encroached upon. And it is harder if you have got a boss who might have different, you know, work ethic or standards or lifestyle to you, but perhaps they don't have children, or it's their company and they expect you to be on as much as them. For me, though, the issue I had when I went back to having my first child was the boundaries I had with myself, which was I kind of felt like I needed to prove myself as an employee and be like, well, I've had a child and nothing's changed. But in reality, a lot had changed, you know, and I need to be quite strict with myself and say, do you know what, it's 6 o'clock now. Time to go home.
Absolutely.
And put this down until tomorrow. And it gets easier.
It does.
But it's
but
that
it's
juggle.
A lot of hard work.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of emotional work as well, to be honest, because you have to condition yourself emotionally more than anything else, because you have to say, okay, this is me time, this is children's time, this is work time, and this is how it needs to go.
I'd be kind of curious to hear from anyone, and perhaps, you know, an older generation pre-mobile phones, because you know, this thing in front of me is a gift in some ways. It means that I can go to the park and I can check emails. It means that I could be with my kids and still do a little bit of work. But in other ways, it's blurred lines beyond recognition. And when I think back to kind of the BlackBerry days, they were given as this kind of treat, this perk of, and you get a BlackBerry, whereas you're like, well, actually what you're saying is that you own me now. So I would be curious to see how work-life balance has kind of shifted through the generations, because this is something that I struggle with, is trying to switch off from work when I'm with my kids. And when I say work, I don't necessarily mean the station, I mean other things that I'm doing, because it's a constant distraction.
It is.
Do you ever have to lock yours away?
But it's also a conscious decision.
Exactly.
You have to make a conscious decision. And the reason for that is because the effects on this is long-term. We are raising kids who need to be empowered, encouraged. They need their due time as well. Quality time
and
is extremely
precious.
Important with the kids, because once they're grown up, they really don't need you after 15 years of age.
Don't say this. Don't
they need you for very different reasons.
Yeah,
Let me correct myself.
The bank of mum and dad and lifts everywhere.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to ask you. If there's any advice that you would have for any parents who are listening today, any working parents who feel like they're perhaps not getting that quality time or connection, what have you found to be effective?
I think scheduling, prioritizing, and ensuring that you don't go to work every day with guilt, because that really plays on your mind. So these three things definitely have worked for me, and I think it can work for everyone.
We spoke recently to Lisa Sherrington-Boyd, who's known as Principal Lisa, the potty queen, and she introduced me to a concept called the Magic 20. And it's about having quality time with your kids. And in an ideal world, it would be an hour per kid per day. This is not between school and work and life. This is, you know, a bit of an unrealistic ideal. But 20 minutes, I can do. I can say to my seven-year-old, oh, should we have a magic 20? You know, your sister's doing this, or, you know, let's nip out, I need to do that. And it's something that they kind of ask for now. And it can be anything. You know, while her sister was sleeping yesterday, Phoebe was like, oh, let's have a magic 20, let's play Lego. So we played Lego before she woke up. The other one wanted to go to the supermarket. Who knows why, but this was her, you know, her treat with me. But for the younger kids, I think naming it has actually made a real difference, because it's not just going, should we play some Lego? It's, this is our time together, you and me. The phone is away, no one else is here, and this is real connection time. It's kind of safeguarded, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I do with my kids is they know exactly what time is mom going to be with them. So then they actually have everything at that time. So that's an hour a day each child.
If you could go back and do it again, starting a business with a three-month-old, do you do anything differently, Anushka?
Nothing differently. No regrets. I'm super happy where I am, and I love the way my kids have grown up to be.
Oh, that is wonderful to hear. It really, really is. If there's any topics that are affecting you, please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you, Anushka. Really appreciate your insights and your story. I think it's wonderful, because it's something we hear a lot of the time about, is work-life balance possible? And, you know, judging the messages we've had, absolutely not, and thumbs down. And I think a lot of it comes down to, in my mind, balance is a bit misleading. You know, it's never going to be 50-50 all the time. Sometimes it's about harmony. It's about sometimes work might need you more than the family. Sometimes you might have a desire to spend more time with the family, or there is a need there as well. And being self-aware enough to realize that, you know, some days are going to be better than others, and
absolutely,
hopefully good times are ahead, is it's all part of the struggle and the juggle of being a working parent.
As long as you enjoy everything that you do.
And that's a topic for another day, when
absolutely
to leave your job and start your own company. Anushka, thank you so much. Really
thank
appreciate
you so much,
your time.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is Friday tomorrow, and for many families, the prospect of 9 days stretching ahead is a bit bittersweet. Yes, you get to be together, but what are you going to do? Well, we're here to help. We'd love to hear from you as well, of course. What are your plans for the Eid break? Are you going abroad? Are you staying close to home? Are there any activities on that bucket list here in Dubai? 4001, or indeed use that WhatsApp. Joining us to help this afternoon is Kareem from Kids App. That's Kids App with a K. Kareem, how are you, sir?
Great. It's good to be back, Helen, and I'm super excited about Eid. I've got an amazing lineup for you today.
Promises, promises. We are on hand with inspiration and hopefully a few deals as well. Now, it wouldn't be Eid without some fireworks, so I'm hoping this is part of your lovely lineup this afternoon. Do we know if, when and where we should be looking at the skies?
Well, it's not just part of the lineup. It's the very first thing. It's, you know, where else to watch fireworks other than the most traditional of places at El Sif. And they also have them at La Mer on the first day of Eid. It would be 9 p.m. on La Mer and 9:30 p.m. at El Sif. We all believe right now that the first day of Eid will be Monday. So head down to either El Sif or La Mer. More details on Kids App on where to see the fireworks.
So, as you said, 9 o'clock at Le Mans, 9:30 at Al Seif. They've got some loads of entertainment down there. Last time I was there, before Ramadan, there were stages with performers. And I have to say, I just love it down at Al Seif. I think it's just the most beautiful spot and nice chance to have a little look around for Fahidi as well. So stay tuned to the news, of course, when we get confirmation that first day of Eid. But on the first night, fireworks lighting up the sky. Speaking of the sky, I saw a little sneaky photo today that suggested that the moon is back at Oli Oli. For anyone who's not familiar with what I'm talking about, this is really, it has to be seen to be believed. Can you explain about the Museum of the Moon?
Yes, so, I mean, you know, who needs to learn how to become an astronaut to go to the moon? They've got one at Oli Oli, and it's, you know, created by one of the most famous artists, Luc Jaram, and he's used NASA images to replicate every inch of the moon's surface. So it's about as accurate as you can get. It's built up over in Oli Oli. I've never had a chance to see it myself. Every time they bring it out, I happen to be away, and I'm going to be away this Eid. But I mean, from what I've heard, it's really spectacular. I think, Helen, you've seen it over there, right?
I have.
A 5-meter replica.
It's huge. It fills one of the entire galleries at Oli Oli, and the attention to detail, it's absolutely mesmerizing to look at. I also defy anyone to go along and take a photo with their child and not write the caption on Instagram, "I love you to the moon and back." It's basically impossible. So this is Oli Oli running through until May 8th. Now, this artist, as you say, Luc Jaram, is really, really highly sought after. He's done replicas of planets. He's been all over the UK. And it's this kind of strange juxtaposition of a planet inside or a planet in an outdoor setting that it's just so, so visibly arresting. So I do urge you to go along. Access, I believe, is free with your entry tickets to Oli Oli. And I'm honestly just a massive fan of Oli Oli as a space, as a science and edutainment, I hate that word, an edutainment center where we seem to get something different from it every single time, whether it's the water room or the wind room, you know, making a big old mess. My husband's obsessed with the Lego cars. So a fantastic place. And I think it's one of those rare places in Dubai that seems to really cater to different age groups. If you've got, you know, a 3-year-old and a 10-year-old, they're both going to enjoy it. And brilliant they are that they've got the moon. Museum of the Moon is back, I believe, from tomorrow, running through it's until May 8th.
From tomorrow, yeah. And, you know, it really is a special place. And one thing just to note is booking is mandatory, and I especially recommend it during the Eid week. So an easy way to book is obviously through Kids App. That's KIDZAPP. But one thing also, Helen, we've got an offer going now where if you can buy a 3-visit pass, so you can combine this with 2 other visits, and it's valid for the next 6 months, you get 25% off as well.
I think we would do 3 visits in about 3 weeks, but a great deal. We were talking travel on the show yesterday and talking about some family-friendly hotels. Now, producer Poonam is child-free, but still had an amazing time at Santara Mirage. This is a brand new hotel that's opened up down at Deira Island. Poonam?
Yes.
Did you go on a water slide? Were you entertained by a magician?
I saw the magician, and he had a box over someone's head, and I was so excited. I thought about your kids everywhere I went. Honestly, I was like, I gotta tell Helen.
You should have told me. I would have put them in a taxi to you.
Oh, that would have been lovely. And they have a lazy river, which I went on with the kids. They have an inflatable area on a swimming pool. They have a nighttime cinema, which I watched too.
Ooh.
It was so good.
So this was a bit of a hot topic on the show yesterday, and you're also singing its praises today. I think I need to get myself down to Santara. What have been some of the big hits with some of the users of Kids Appen in your community, Karim?
No, well, actually, you know, since you said, Santara has been a massive one, and it's kept popping up, and really nothing but good feedback. And I see, you know, Poonam has also experienced it. We've also, you know, what we've done is we've taken some of the biggest hits for Eid, requests for users, and even though we give normal discounts, as you know, on Kids App, which are unique and amazing, we're giving an extra 10% on all the key venues through the app, like Legoland World of Motion Gate, Laguna, Dubai Aquarium, Kidzania. To find those promo codes, you have to head over to our Instagram. That's Kids App UAE. So all of those places have great discounts. And one last recommendation, really, I would say, is it's probably your last chance to catch the right market at the Police Academy Park. You know, the weather is still good, surprisingly good, actually, this time of the year. We're quite blessed. I think, Helen, have you been down there to the Police Academy Live Market?
Of course I have. I spent a small fortune doing my bit to support small businesses in the UAE. Yeah, fantastic shopping. And just a lovely park, a lovely feel. We go there, certainly during the cooler months, pretty much every week, and get some veggies from the right market as well. So, yeah, it is a fantastic one. But they're also going to be doing... you know, that it's just all sorts. They've got F&B pop-ups, there's going to be some live music as well, and I understand that there's a bit of a locally rescued animal section as well, where kids get to meet them. So 3 p.m. to 10 p.m, so great for that kind of sunset feel at the right market. Speaking of food, Dubai Food Festival is coming back, Karim. Do we have any kind of dates for the diary, any more information at this stage, or is it all still TBC'd?
Stay tuned. It's coming from 2nd to 15th May. You know how it works. There's set price meals at Dubai Restaurant Week, so any participating restaurants or venues. They're finding there's going to be a lot of events around taste events, etc. Lots of homegrown concepts. It's all going to be in neighborhood spots, and you know, all the information is going to start coming out in the next few days. And as you can imagine, there's about 200 nationalities around that you can explore.
This is always one of my favourites when it comes to having a bit of a bargain meal in somewhere that I normally think is a bit rich for my blood. And some of the kind of star restaurants in Dubai do tend to book up really, really fast. So make sure you do keep an eye on that, because the meals are phenomenal and the prices tend to be really, really impressive. Karim, tell us then, what would your top pick be for families over the Eid break, apart from being together and relaxing? Do you feel like there is a star destination, an attraction that you really need to be checking out over the next couple of days?
Honestly, there's so much to do. And I would have to say it's the staycation at Santara, because, like, literally this you know, this hotel is brand new. It's just getting very popular now. So many people are going, and it's going to be fully booked and hard to get hold of. But I've just had great feedback. They've got water slides, a lazy river. They've got a kids' spa, a kids' club. It's a beachfront location. The rooms are amazing as well. And the price right now is pretty amazing, 499 dirhams per night for two adults and a child. So if I was going to say to anybody, you know, book a small staycation. We all deserve a great break after, you know, a long Ramadan and a long, busy month. So go for it, guys.
Well, I understand you're off to South Africa. Have an amazing time, Karim. Always appreciate your insights, your inspirations, and some great deals over there on the app. So have a fantastic time to you, Eid Mubarak, and we'll love to catch up when you're back. Thank you, sir.
Eid Mubarak.
And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.